So you got yourself an idea, do you? And you're wondering not just how to sell it, but how to market it. On today's show, we've got a marketing guru who's ready to help us get there. Let's settle in for a pep talk.
A pocket-sized pep talk, the podcast that can help energize your business and your life with a quick, inspiring message. Now, here's your host, Rob Jalas.
Well, I'm here with Dan Englander, and he's the CEO and founder of Sales Schema, a fractional new business team for marketing agencies, and he hosts the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. That's a podcast I was on, and I enjoyed talking to him, and that's how we met. He's the author of Mastering Account Management and the B2B Sales Blueprint. In his spare time, he enjoys developing new aches and pains via Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Dan, welcome to Pocket Size Pep Talks.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a pep talk, so let's not bury the lead here. How does understanding marketing help us in our everyday lives?
Oh, man, that's a big question. I always feel like there's all these different words that kind of mean the same thing, like persuasion, PR, psychology, we're all kind of talking about the same thing with just different intentions, I guess. So, you know, in your everyday life, I guess you're kind of marketing and selling things all the time. Like you're selling what you want to order for dinner with your family and so on. So I'm trying to figure out what I've learned in my business and career that translates the most. And I think, I guess the negotiational aspects of sales and marketing I find translate more to everyday life, you know, or the main thing, like from my sales background, is just introducing all the objections up front. Anything you want to do, just being like, look, here's what you're going to think is wrong with this idea. And then you've won. Sometimes, maybe not always, but sometimes.
Well, no, I think that's intelligent. I always tell people when you're pre-call planning, you've got about six questions, and one of them might as well be, what objections do you anticipate hearing? So right. We don't get caught in the headlights, like a deer in the headlights. I also, it's interesting listening to you answer that first question, because I also think that a lot of people get confused just between the difference between sales and marketing. I'm not a marketing guy. I'm a sales guy. And people think, well, sales, marketing, same thing. It's like, no. And so my one sentence sort of dirty definition that I throw out is, you know, marketing is what brings somebody to the table. And sales is what happens once they sit down. So sometimes when we see people struggling, they go, oh, I'm not a good salesperson. The first question is, well, how's your pipeline? How many prospects you have in it? Well, I don't have anybody in there. Well, you don't really have a sales issue. You have a marketing issue. And the reverse is true. If they tell me, wow, I got a ton of people, but none of them want to act on my decisions. Ah, you don't have a marketing issue. You have a sales issue. So, but it is funny how people kind of push the two together.
And I think we were talking earlier, and what I find to be kind of like counterintuitive is that, you know, a salesperson can bounce around and go from one industry to another relatively easily. They might need to learn a little bit, but a marketer, like a career marketer in CPG or consumer packaged goods, is going to have a lot of trouble going into marketing for like a SaaS product, and which I always find interesting, because you'd think that, you know, that it would be the opposite, because of the complexities of sales and the back and forth. But there's something that's really consistent, I guess, about the human software, and sales is essentially interacting with the individual human software or hardware, as opposed to marketing, which is a lot of other variables and factors, I guess.
And I want to tell you, I don't spend my podcast agreeing with everybody. Once again, I think you're right on there. I think that, and I can tell you that for me, I've worked with NASA in a sales training capacity. I work with hostage negotiators in a sales training capacity. Yeah. And then, you know, the banks and the wirehouses. How come? Well, because there are very defined, repeatable, predictable techniques. But it's the same thing. It's like the Holy Grail looking for a marketing, repeatable, predictable approach. In a sense, and you're the expert, my opinion has always been, stop looking, because it's going to be dependent on the product and the clientele, et cetera. And one right. size doesn't fit all. Yeah. And I think that's what you're saying. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of perceived solutions, be they software consultants or whatever, whoever, selling on the promise of automation and repeatability, because that's what we all want, you know, that you can't, I mean, you can blame them to an extent, but they're conforming to what, you know, we're all lazy. We all want the machine that you can just put the token in and then out comes the business. And, I'm not saying that you can't ever get there, but it's never going to last forever. You know, that's a machine that even if you get to that state, you know, thank your lucky stars for the month or 6 months that it works perfectly, but it's going to break. You're right. going to have to revamp it. You're going to have to optimize it, just like any machine for that matter. Yeah.
Well, not only that, but I've always claimed when business gets that easy,
yeah,
get ready for the competitors to come jumping on in. So, exactly. You know, Toyota had the car of the year of the Camry for 3 years in a row. But if you ever watched them, they changed that car by dramatically every year, because the next year, everybody's car looked like a Camry.
Right.
And so they had to stay ahead of things. You know, when I talk to a marketing guy, I love to talk about cold calling a little bit. Hang on there, everybody. We're going to work. We're going to get through this. Grab something. Because the term scares people. My dad used to tell me that, you know, cold calling's like shaving. You do just a little bit of it each day. But yet a person in your position, a marketing person, has a better pulse on emailing, on cold calling. Yeah. So tell me, and tell our audience, how can you open doors with cold emails? It frightens people.
Yeah, and just to clarify a little bit, I wouldn't say we're exactly marketing or exactly sales. I think we're in this sort of like nether region between the two, which you could call lead generation or top of funnel or whatever works for you. But to, you know, to answer your question, I think that cold calling can still work. And I think that it's important for people, if they're in a sales role or they're entrepreneurs, to not be scared of the phone. And I think the phone is still extremely powerful. I think whether or not it's the best tool or the primary tool in all situations is dependent on your industry and who you're selling into, and so on. But there's a point at which, you know, the phone needs to be brought into the equation, and probably sooner rather than later. So for our space, and I don't want to speak about other people's, you know, because every industry is a little bit different, but for us selling a complex service, you know, marketing services in most cases to enterprise brands, you know, mid to large companies, et cetera, we find phone to work really well once there's some level of familiarity, once there's a face to a name, be it on LinkedIn, email, et cetera. And it's sometimes that last, you know, bit of persistence that really is valuable. And that's where we tend to use it. And that's, you know, one of us calling up and saying, hey, calling on behalf of so-and-so, saw, you know, you opened our email, or you hit me up, responded last week, was, you know, thought I'd give you a ring. And that's where we tend to see it open doors.
Good. And so I just want to validate this hunch of mine, which is, and kind of clarify what you said. You're okay with cold calling, cold emails, but let's not do it all day long. Let's not use that as our only marketing source. Let's put that with, you know, a bunch of other ideas and just make it part of a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think to go further into it, I think it's more like getting some level of agreement first, because there's mm-hmm. so much, there's, you know, we all get spam calls so often that it's sometimes like beating your head against a brick wall these days when maybe it wasn't before. And I think that trend's probably going to accelerate because, you know, there's more remote office situations. There's less of a gatekeeper sort of situation. And I'm not saying that's gone, but I think it's moving, you know, more towards the idea of you calling somebody's cell. And if it's a number right. you don't know, what do you do? You know, you don't pick it up usually or whatever.
All right. Well, let's stay there for a second, because you're right. And I'm smiling because I hadn't even thought about that. The fact that the gatekeeper has been reduced somewhat. But in comes this new form of communication, which is better than a phone call and not as good as a face-to-face visit, which is a Zoom call or a WebEx or whichever your platform is. So Talk to me about that, how the incorporation of Zoom kind of fits into the plane of marketing.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that it's a live experiment, right? So we'll see where it goes. I need to actually spend some time boiling down my thoughts about everything we've learned with Zoom, because we were kind of like fish in water since 2014. We've been a distributed team. We've only sold over things like Zoom since day one, but I've never really thought about it being a lot different, because I'm sort of a dyed in the wool remote salesperson. It's not to say that I've never done in-person sales. I've done it a good amount, but it's usually, even when I was like, in a full-time sales role, it'd probably be about 30% of the deals that I was winning and encountering and so on. So it's a good question. I mean, I think for remote sales, it's just there's just different nuances, right? And there's less small talk. There's less of this getting to know you thing. And it's more about, I think that the bad news is there's going to be less camaraderie, right? There's going to be less of building a real personal connection. So you know, it doesn't mean that can't happen, but it's harder. But I think the good news for salespeople is that it allows you to have more of like a laboratory process based system, right? Where you're going from one thing to another without getting caught off course by anything that could happen in an in-person situation. Like, oh, here's the coffee we ordered. Oh, it turns out the cleaner's here. We got to get you. Oh, there's somebody else came into the room. You know, that stuff is now turned, the knobs turned down a bit. So
right.
That's the pro of it. Yeah.
Well, for those of us, I mean, I Zoomed before once a month, once every other month, not four times, six times a day. So I think we are getting better at it, but to me, and this is just my feeling, I'm really enjoying it. I know Zoom is driving people up a wall, and we're just going to use the term Zoom for all the platforms.
Sure.
So I know it's driving people up a wall, but I like having a cup of coffee with a client via Zoom. I don't just Zoom. I'm trying to create that environment that, and we'll say, let's grab a cup of coffee. So just kind of warm it up. But to me, it's so much better than a phone call. And I don't cold Zoom call. I don't know if you could. I'm not sure that's possible. Yeah. Thank goodness. Real fast.
Yeah.
I got a call from my daughter the other night. It's like the third time she's done this. Yeah. She likes to FaceTime. And so I look, my phone's ringing and it's a FaceTime call. And to me, that's a nightmare. I don't want people, it's my daughter, so it isn't. But I don't want my client just all of a sudden appearing in my office.
Oh yeah, it's an attack.
I don't have hair, but what if I have curlers in? I mean, I don't want that call. But with Zoom, I do like the fact that we're going to have to sort of agree to this meeting.
Right.
And so there's a formality to it, but it's so much better than a phone call.
Oh yeah. I think there's so much creative stuff that you can do on the sales front that people have barely started to experiment with. Like, what if you sent your prospect, and these are people that are qualified and worth it, but you send them nice coffee, like gourmet, you send them cups. If you wanted to get real crazy, you send them a fancy machine and then you say, let's have coffee next week, you know, or something like that. There's all sorts of places that people can go with it, I think.
Well, yeah. But look, again, not only am I physically showing you things in this call or moving documents to you in this call or showing you a video in this call, but I'm reading you in this call. I'm getting, before you open your mouth, just looking at your background, I'm getting a sense of your personality in this call.
Yeah.
Now, next time you're on a Zoom call, close your eyes and see how you do. It's very tough. So I sing the praises, but I'm a guy who's been on the road for 35 years. Well, we're talking about how things evolve, okay? So how have you seen, the ad agency model that you tend to follow evolve, and where do you think it's going?
Yeah. And obviously I wasn't there for the Mad Men era or anything like that. But, I do think that the legacy of that era has still been with the agency world and continues to be with it. So I think, that is a good template for it, where you started, and this isn't just the agency world. I think it's kind of a macro thing where you'd have you could take this to the way that the shelving space works, right? Where you have a few big brands that have incredible power because of limited aggregation, because of limited shelf space. And I think the agency world functioned in that way too, where you'd have an agency of record and there'd be a few big ones like McCann and Gray and, you know, the other ones, Omnicom, the few big companies that would do all sorts of marketing for every company under the sun. There was like a lot of consolidation. And I think that's because the channels of communication obviously were a lot more limited. You'd have television, radio, you know, there'd be a few channels in each one. That's gradually expanded. And then we got the internet and now we have infinite types of marketing. Everything I'm saying is old news. You know, we all kind of have gotten that dynamic, but you know, it's the classic, the future's here, but not evenly distributed quote. So basically, you know, where I think the agencies that are winning are headed is heading more towards the long tail, which is a jargony way of saying specialization, focusing on smaller groups of business buyers and tending to do really well with that. So instead of hiring, you know, one person or one company that your brand would be glued to the hip with, brands are now, you know, juggling perhaps a handful or a multitude of different specialist shops who are really good at a particular thing and understand their problems really well. Well, so I think that's what we're seeing to work. And I think that this crisis and the move to remote work is only going to accelerate that sort of trend from all the data I have anyway.
Yeah. I want to circle that and make sure people caught that because it's a classic instinct versus logic. Our instinct, I believe, in branding is to create something for everyone, right?
Yeah.
That's the instinct. But what you're saying, I believe, is that that might be the instinct, but it's not logical. How can you be? You're now in a sea of sameness. You're diluted, whatever it is. In the book world, Dan, just so you know, if you want to guarantee that you won't get a book published, go write the book for everybody.
Right.
It's find your niche, tighten your brand, nail that brand, you know, own that moment, that wedge of the pie. And if you can do that, good things tend to follow. But it's instinct versus logic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that there's lots of survivor bias and kind of like negative instincts against it, because we all forget how things start. Like, you know, we look at Facebook and we're like, this is a social media network for everyone. So if you're like a startup person, you're like, oh, I'm gonna go start the next Facebook or Amazon, or like it's the everything store, so on and so forth. But you know, we sort of have short memories. We forget that Amazon was once, Facebook was once just college communication, IBM, you know, was once just calculators. And there's really very few, if any, examples of industries that started without starting small, that just took on, you know, the entire market or the entire category. So everyone's always saying, think big, think big, think big, but you know, it's a fine line. You have to ramp up to thinking big, I think. So
yeah, I agree.
I think where you can be useful is probably the better mental model, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're an athlete. You have speed, you know, work on your speed, stay there. We can develop everything, but later, but own that moment. Yeah. All right. We're coming down the home stretch here. It's Pocket Size Pep Talks. Pep my audience up, pump them up a little bit. You're a marketing guy. What would you tell somebody who's listening right now, who's struggling in this space, struggling with their idea, struggling bringing the clients to their idea? What would you tell them?
Well, I think pause, put some, it depends where you are in it, put some distance between it. I mean, a lot of what I've been thinking about in my business is figuring out ways to find magic again. You know, like it sounds silly, but going on walks and all that stuff, it really does help. And then from there, you know, look at what's worked for you, even if it's in a past life or an industry or a skill set, and just kind of keep like gradually expanding on there, as opposed to chasing shiny objects and day trading. You know, I think we see a lot of that, like something fails, so then you're like, well, let me just go to this other green pasture over here. Oh, everything's moving to digital, so let me pick up with Facebook chatbots or whatever the hottest thing is. you know, I think it's cool to have Skunk Works experiments, but I think that if you probably have some accomplishments you can rest on and keep expanding on gradually. And that's where the market's probably going to pay you, you know. So that's maybe a little meandering, but that's probably my best guess at it.
Yeah. Doesn't meander at all. Two things I pulled out of that. One of the biggest ones is pause. I don't think people do that enough. I don't think they do it in the way they converse. I don't think they do it in the way they think.
Yeah.
I think that's extremely valuable. And the second thing is, and I see it all the time in my world, is the chasing of shiny objects. Let's you and I write that book. Because what happens is that shiny object is you being tired of something that's been working well for you. Yeah. And so to go back, you know, all of a sudden, all right, maybe now it's shiny again because you paused. But I just had a coaching call with somebody and who's giving a big presentation and getting some ideas here or there. No. When we work with Rob Jollis, I got to tell you, I do what's called lockdown. I lock a presentation down 2 weeks beforehand. And yeah. Because all kinds of shiny objects are going to appear. And what they really are is you're getting so good and so tight on what you're doing that it doesn't look as exciting to you. But that audience, that client, they're hearing it and seeing it for the first time. Yeah. I love that. Pause and stop chasing those shiny objects. Dan, where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, for sure. So salesschema.com is the best place to go to learn about us. We just did a webinar, if you don't mind me plugging that.
Yeah,
so
we did
one on basically like all the changes we're doing to our outreach. So if you want to see our workflow and tangible examples from our clients and stuff, that's salesschema.com/crisis prospecting, one word, which is a very dramatic title, but I think it's a pretty fun presentation. So, and then email just dan@salesschema.com. Feel free to reach out to me.
There you go. And I've had the pleasure of meeting Dan a couple weeks ago. Great guy, great insights today. I really appreciate you being on the show. Everybody, you got a good one today. Think about what we were talking about and let's end with, remember what he ended with, which is above all else, just take a pause. Take a pause, kind of study, retrace your steps, think of what's been working for you. But this isn't just for business. This is for a lot of the things that we face. So I can't thank you enough. And again, thanks so much for being on Pocket Size Pep Talks.
Dan. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate and recommend it on iTunes, Outcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more information on this show and Rob at jollis.com.